Much of what you do is being tracked. Your shopping habits, political leanings, even how much you exercise is being collected by data mining firms, and they have names that are totally unfamiliar to you. Now, one of those companies, Axiom, has stepped out of the shadows and is preparing a service which will enable you to know what the company knows about you. We're joined now by Financial Times reporter Emily Steele. Welcome back to our show.
Thank you.
Will Axiom, spelled A-C-X-I-O-M, be charging people to find out what kinds of information have been collected about them?
So a lot of the details for this new service still are being ironed out. I met with an executive from the company earlier this week, and what they said is that this idea is underway. They're working on the plans, but with a lot of the technical and logistical details, they're still trying to figure those out.
Are they one of the bigger companies?
Axiom definitely is one of the biggest data companies in the world. They have a market cap of about $1.4 billion, and they collect hundreds of data points about more than 700 million consumers all across the country. And they sell those details to more than 7,000 companies as well.
So it's likely that they're going to want to monetize selling it, providing the information to us as well. What kinds of information are they usually interested in?
So right now they're really interested in the gamut. They, like you said earlier, track everything from about how much money you're making to how much your house is worth, whether you have kids, if you like to exercise, what sort of restaurants you go to, the stores that you shop at. And what Axiom and kind of this other group of companies like Experian and Equifax are trying to do is build this total comprehensive profile about you that they then can turn around and sell to companies.
So is the equivalent of a dossier on me with my photograph, my purchasing history, maybe a bit about my browsing habits, the things that I might write on Twitter?
Right, exactly. It can be everything from what you're posting on social media to your public posts on Facebook. If that includes pictures about you, that could be part of that file.
And I'm wondering if it's possible these firms may know things about me that even my closest friends don't know about or that I don't know about.
You know, I was wondering the same thing. There is a service that right now consumers can access information about themselves for a fraud detection product that Axiom also markets and they also sell. And for a fee of $5, you go to their website, you fill out this form, and then you have to mail with an actual stamp and an envelope and a personal check, $5 to the company to see what sort of information they have.
Is that rather retro for a company of this sort?
That's what I was thinking when I was filling out this form. It seemed kind of interesting that I couldn't just enter in my credit card information or couldn't just give them.
They haven't heard about PayPal?
That's what the question is. That was one of the things that was interesting me meeting with the executive this week, is that he said that the way that Axiom collects data for the marketing side of its business is fairly old school. Most of their clients aren't really interested in having information about an individual. They don't care about me in particular, but they care about women who are in their 20s or 30s and living in New York and interested in certain types of products. So they buy those lists of consumers in big batch bulks. And so for them to create a new service like this means that they really need to kind of switch the way that their systems work and the way that their data is stored.
And we've talked in the past about how a store like Target will spot whether a young woman is pregnant. Even if her family doesn't know she's pregnant, Target knows.
Right, and it's really, I'm just so fascinated and intrigued by kind of how companies are using this data, because a lot of this is out there. A lot of it's already public. You have voter records. When you buy a house, those real estate records are public. Your driver's license, all of that information is already out there. But once companies start collecting it all and mining it and analyzing it, they're able to find out some really interesting things. There's this man, his name is Eric Siegel, and he just wrote a book called Predictive Analytics, and he talks about how companies are using this for everything from predicting what sort of credit card offers to show you when you wind up on a website to, like what you said, if a woman is pregnant or even when a person is likely to die. So it really kind of runs the range of...
Well, how would they know that? Just simply by the drugs that you're using?
I don't know, to be honest, but it's a mix of probably the drugs that you're taking, one of the components is why early retirement decreases your life expectancy. Mm-hmm. And it's even things like vegetarians happen to miss fewer flights is what he writes about in this book. So,
well,
figuring out that data and then figuring out what you can tell with it.
Now, I'm hoping it's more accurate than my Wikipedia entry. Judging from that, I would expect that there'll be a fair amount of false information within these data collections.
That's actually really interesting. About 5 years ago, I worked at the Wall Street Journal, and I wrote a story. I was really interested in what these companies knew about me. And granted, this was a really long time ago, but the profiles that they had assembled really didn't reflect 100% who I am. But kind of fast forward 5 years, there's been so much development in this space. There's so much more data that's available about all of us online, from our tweets and posts on Facebook to the searches that we make online, just kind of going out into the world in real time. And at the same time, companies are developing really sophisticated systems to capture that and figure out what it all means. So while there probably is some false information, it's moving in a direction very, very quickly where it's a pretty accurate representation of who you probably are.
But if I do gain access to my files and I say this is inaccurate, I wonder if they'll adjust it or just assume that I'm trying to supply false information about myself.
So when I talked with the executive this week, that was one of the things that he talked about that was a challenge in creating the system, that they're trying to figure out a way that they can let people correct information about themselves, but then not deliberately falsify that information. So the idea might be, maybe I eat a ton of potato chips and I don't exercise and I don't want anybody to know that about me. But if they see that I'm going to the grocery store and buying all these products and I don't have a gym membership, then maybe they know that that's not the truth. And so they're trying to figure out a way that they can work through that issue.
In social media, most of us are self-selective. It's what we choose to share about ourselves that we post. So they are not getting the whole story. You're saying that because they're drawing from so many different streams of data, in the end, they can become self-correcting?
Well, and that's the idea, that maybe on Facebook you only put the most attractive photos of you, or on Twitter you only write kind of the smartest nuggets that you can say in 140 characters. But these companies have relationships with the stores that you shop at, or they also have deals with different companies that can figure out the different prescriptions that people take. And so part of the information is online and is kind of public and readily apparent to everyone, but then also part of it can be collected through these other sources that are your actual behaviors in the real world and really do kind of, if not define who you are, say what you've done.
We're talking about what data mining companies know about us and how they are responding to pressure to be more transparent with Emily Steele, who writes for the Financial Times. Well, since there are so many streams of data about us being collected, will we ever be able to get away from our digital selves? Will something I said 10 years ago continue to haunt me for the rest of my life? I'm thinking of Anthony Weiner right now, but it could be anybody. You could have said something really stupid somewhere down the line, and it could have gotten on your record, and then, well, you know, you're sorry you said that stupid thing.
You know, that's really a debate that's happening right now. The New Yorker had a great piece yesterday that talked about maybe in a world where everything that we do is public and is captured and collected and created into this profile about us, that, number one, if you can't delete those profiles, that maybe the future of privacy is lying.
Well, do you have this?
Right away, they went on to say that it's difficult to lie all the time if you're constantly being surveyed.
Is the public aware that such large-scale data collection by private firms is taking place? What kind of feedback do you get from your readers?
You know, I've written about this issue for more than 3 years now, and I've even written stories about that before that. For the most part, every time that I have a story like this, people are surprised, and they don't really realize that this level of tracking and surveillance is going on. And it's an issue, too, that government and federal regulators are pretty concerned about. The FTC has an investigation now into these big data brokers like Axiom, and that follows similar investigations by the legislator.
And what impact, what sense do you have, has the impact of that been on the industry? Do you think it's one of the reasons that Axiom is now making this offer?
So when I asked the executive that very question, and he said it was sort of the reason that they are making this offer. So it definitely is coming amid all of the scrutiny. And for them to add this new level of transparency, it really could prevent more regulation or oversight over their business practices. The interesting thing about this whole world is that right now there are no current laws in the U.S. that require these big data brokers to maintain the privacy of individuals' data unless they're used for credit, employment, insurance, housing, or other similar purposes.
A listener writes in to say that we should only pay cash for alcohol.
You know, some privacy advocates live that sort of lifestyle where they only pay cash for everything that they buy. Some people will wrap their cell phones in tin foil so that it won't the signal won't transmit to people where they're going all the time. People will surf the web in privacy settings, but a lot of this is really hard to avoid, though, too.
Data brokers are not required by law to maintain the privacy of an individual's data unless they're used for credit, employment, insurance, housing, or other similar purposes. So, theoretically, what could they do with my information?
Like what we were talking about before, the information really could be used.
Do we know how many times a bundle of my personal information can be sold and resold?
There are systems right now, especially online, that have created these exchanges really similar to online to stock exchanges that will sell data every single instant about you, and it will trade for as little as kind of a fraction of a dollar to a couple of dollars based on what that information is. We know that this is a multi-billion-dollar industry, and that a lot of people consider this data and this information to be like digital gold, but it's really hard to track down kind of how that money flows through the ecosystem.
And they're getting this information because we have so many ways that we're connected to the web, smartphones, tablet applications. And then, of course, there are those rewards cards that many stores issue. Is that all going to companies like Axiom?
Right. So it is information about your activities online, kind of the searches that you make, the websites that you visit, your activity on social networking sites. And then it also can be your activity at the store. So if you go to a drugstore and you use a loyalty card and you buy certain products, then that information also can be put into this dossier about you. It also can include real estate records. It can include marriage licenses, divorce divorce filings, real estate records, kind of everything about you that is in some way, shape, or form public. The other thing, the other place where they get a lot of this information as well is when you get a new product and you fill out a warranty form. A lot of times those will ask you questions about yourself, kind of how old you are, how many kids you have, what your salary is, that sort of data. And that also is kind of amassed into this broader profile about you as well.
And for many of us, we see that as a kind of a trade-off. We get the warranty, or in the case of the loyalty cards, we get a discount on certain products. But we're not told that we're opting into this tracking system. How long have these companies been collecting information about us?
So Acxiom's a really interesting company. They have been around for about 40 years now. They are based in Little Rock, Arkansas. And they really were kind of one of the pioneers of this industry and really one of the biggest players in this field. And kind of they were marching along decade after decade after decade, and all of a sudden this digital revolution hit the business, and they hired a new CEO a couple of years ago. His name is Scott Howe, and he came from Microsoft, and it's been his mission since he's been there to really try to, you know, digitize this company and bring it into the next stage.
Federal law requires that the firms that handle our credit scores have to provide us with that information free of charge once a year. But that hasn't stopped a number of them from charging consumers for their credit scores. Do you see any parallels between how credit scores are treated by law and how these other data sets might be regulated someday?
So it is interesting with the credit score data that is available. I think the thing that's really challenging with these other sets of data that are used for other marketing or business purposes is that Acxiom is one of the biggest players in this field, but there are tons of companies that operate in this industry. And so to figure out all of the different companies that have all of this different information about you and regulate this business is really kind of a real hurdle that regulators will have to deal with.
Well, there's an anti-regulation atmosphere in Washington right now. But what kinds of regulations on the data mining industry do privacy advocates want to see put in place?
So what a lot of privacy advocates, number one, are requesting is that people will be able to see what information that these companies have about them. For the most part, you can't do that right now, and people really don't have any idea of the level of information that these companies know about them. Even the Senate Commerce Committee launched an investigation, as did the House, and one of the statements that came out of that was that the data brokers kind of submitted these responses, but the responses really only offered a glimpse into the practice of this industry that has operated in the shadows for years. But then on...
Hello?
Oh, I'm sorry. On top of that,
Maybe I should ask you another question.
That would be great.
Is something happening there? A listener asks, does Acxiom claim it owns the data it collects? How can it resell it to others when we're not compensated for it?
That's a question that one of the commenters on our site asked as well. And they do consider themselves owning this information. And there's been a couple of startups that have cropped up in the past couple of years that have tried to make it a business where people can sell their information to these big companies, but they really haven't taken off. And kind of what a lot of these companies have found is that when you go to the marketplace to sell your personal data, it's really not worth that much. It's probably in the tens of dollars, if that.
One of the articles you wrote for an FT series on big data last year opened with a futuristic vision of a married couple arguing in their living room, and their television set, which is playing in the background, listens to their conversation, intuits that they're having a fight, and then automatically spits out an ad about a local marriage therapist for the next commercial break. Is that future really that far off?
It really isn't. This vision was outlined in a Verizon patent application, but if you think of the technologies that are possible today, it really is within the realms of possibility, and it's really just one vision of how some of these companies are envisioning using these rich profiles that they're amassing about individuals. And it's not just how they're envisioning using it, but also how they see kind of every interaction with a consumer, with a person, as a point to collect data about them, to analyze that person, and to spit it out in some way, too.
And I'm assuming that if Verizon is going to do it, everybody's going to do it eventually, so we won't be able to escape. I've been talking with Financial Times reporter Emily Steele. Thank you so much for being on our show again.
Yeah, thank you very much.